on today's episode, though, we're going to the gym. We're going. Okay. Yep. Starting up front.
Recording from New York and Los Angeles, your hosts, Nicole Katz and Brianna Klein, are lined up on the grid for this week's Grid Walk. Engines are fired up, ready to broadcast to you every Thursday on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, and more. Subscribe, like the video, turn on auto downloads, and leave a review to provide us with a fresh set of tires. Today, Grid Walk will take pit stops at...
This week's episode, we are going to start with a conversation about the fact that we have the Japanese GP this week, and that does feel weird because it is April and not the end of the season, it's the beginning of the season, and there's a lot of reasons to be excited about this. So we're going to give you a very strange preview for the Japanese GP this week that really doesn't talk about the race at all and just about our excitement for cherry blossom trees. No, I'm kidding, we're going to talk about more than just the cherry blossom trees, I promise. After that, we're going to talk about Lewis's article in GQ magazine. There were a lot of reasons for us to be excited, to yammer about, and also he mentions Serena Williams and acknowledges that he's a GOAT. So we're going to talk about all of that and more. Red Bull insists on making our lives just a little bit worse every week. And even though we are not talking about the Christian Horner sexual assault case this week, that doesn't mean we're not thinking about it, acknowledging it all the time. But we are going to talk about the fact that they are making the on-track product significantly worse and hope for some musical chairs. Because Red Bull, you deliver on musical chairs every year. Can you deliver on it this year? Please? Please? Just a little uncertainty. Okay, moving on. Liberty Media, who owns F1, bought MotoGP this week. So we're going to talk about all the implications for that and what we can learn about F1 and Liberty Media's thoughts about their F1 ownership through their new MotoGP ownership. And last but not least, it is a race week this week, so we're going to give you predictions for the Japan GP. And we want you to mention in the comments below how many predictions this week of our 5 predictions do you think are going to be the same? Because our goal every week is to come with different ones. So let us know in the comments below what your guess is, and if you're right, you know, you can edit the comment and be like, yeah, we're right. I don't know what's wrong with me today. Take it away, voiceover man.
It's lights out and away we go on this week's Grid Walk.
Japan. Wow, this is in the April. Second time on this podcast, the second time this week that we're talking about a race in Japan.
If you missed our April Fool's episode, definitely go watch it. I think it's my favorite content we've ever created, hands down. Like,
First, make sure you watch Cars 2 or you have a memory of Cars 2, and then go listen to our...
I don't know if you need to watch Cars 2. You just need to have watched enough of Cars to understand that we're talking about an animated movie.
What do you mean? It's real. The World Grand Prix was just in Tokyo on the street race, and now we're talking about F1 in Suzuka in April.
How is what's-his-face going to like do back-to-back races in the same?
Well, thank God there's no dirt. Oh, well, I guess there is dirt in Suzuka, so hey, we're screwed.
But not on the track, theoretically. Okay, we gotta... So, if none of that would make any
sense...
No
more cars! No more cars!
No more cars! Actual cars! So, F1 is racing at Suzuka in April, which is wild! I can't... This was so exciting when F1 released the calendar. It's now exciting living it. F1 is trying to reorganize their calendar so it makes more sense, and...
Kinda! Yeah.
No, I mean, having Japan and then China back to back, and like, you're already in that, like,
hemisphere.
I mean, the truth
place.
Is, Australia is so far away from everything that, like, but this is the closest, theoretically, I guess Singapore, maybe. I don't know. I'm bad at geography. But all of this is to say, it's weird that it's happening in April, but I'm hyped that we get one of my favorite races on the calendar when things are still uncertain and up in the air. Like, normally this is end of season, like, we really just, like, know what the deal is kind of race. So it's,
and
like,
what, I think, like, Japan was when Red Bull clinched, like, the championship.
Last year.
Yeah, so it feels very weird to be... Yeah, it was either the team or Max, or whichever,
someone
who knows.
Did.
What
that, there were
Someone did at Red Bull, it happened, blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
Like, and now we're back here, and it's very interesting coming off of the weekends and racing in Melbourne that we just came off of, and now kind of going into Japan. I mean, does it really change, like, a lot about the dominance of things? No, but, like, there's a little bit more interesting things. Not things are as solidified as they were, you know, Japan in October.
And people are actually bringing upgrades to this track. So, like, I don't think we're used to, like, the first upgrades ever. Well, we're definitely not, because it's normally at the end of the season. So, like, the first time we're going to see some of these cars upgraded, making changes, trying to catch up to Red Bull. Ferrari's going to try to win a race with Max on the track. Like, all this stuff. And Suzuka. Like, do you think Seb is like, oh.
Wow. This is, like, a kind of, it'd be fun to come back maybe a little bit.
Are we going to get Buzzing Corner again this year?
Bees, 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 bees.
Oh, I really hope so. I haven't seen anything. I hope we're getting Buzzing Corner again.
Oh, I just don't want to get my hopes up now, yeah. But like, I really wanted to.
Tangent, sidebar, that has nothing to do with the race this weekend that we're supposed to be talking about. Did you see that Seb tested in a Le Mans car?
I did see that.
Uh-huh.
Keeping himself busy. Although if he wants to be busy with the bees this weekend, that'd be fun too.
But there's a rumor that he might sign on for next year's World Endurance Championship. And I'm like, please, I want to get Seb in a race car.
That would be so fun to watch. Seb back in, like, actual racing.
Yeah. But, okay, this is the second time we've gotten distracted trying to talk about the race this weekend. So let me regroup, and I'm going to do that by looking at the outline of this conversation of what we were going to talk about, because I don't remember what is next. But, yay, it makes more sense on the calendar. Rain. I think it's hysterical that one of the benefits of moving Japan earlier in the year was that we might not get Japan with rain, and it's supposed to rain this weekend. Now, for context, it's Tuesday, so like a lot can change in the weather system, but I had a good sad chuckle
good
about
chuckle.
That.
Good chuckle. I'm like, haha, yeah, wow, this was one of the goals. Now it's like, well, we'll give this to you. I think I have such a bad taste in my mouth from like the stint of races last year where just like every quali it was raining. So I just feel really traumatized by it. So not ready for that, hoping it's not going to happen. I used to fall into the place of like a little rain can sometimes bring chaos. But most recently it's just been like rain just prolongs racing and I'm just watching people stand in a paddock, which I don't want. So,
well, also the drivers are so good now. Like, it's not that we don't have the occasional chaos agent mixed in there, but I think in the past, because there were more pay drivers than there are now, there were enough chaos agents in the group that if it rained, there could actually be some, like, I don't root for crashes, but enough chaos going on that you're like, oh yeah, rain. And last year showed me that all the drivers on the group for the most part are good enough at their job that it just, to your point, like made longer, less exciting racing. And if a driver made a mistake, it just like, it didn't seem entertaining. It was like, oh yeah, they made like the one mistake. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it didn't like amplify any like racing opportunities. Gaps were still just huge. It just didn't bring any sort of extra excitement. So hoping that doesn't happen, but you know, irony, coincidence, whatever the proper term is, if it does, would be really, really funny. Be a beautiful backdrop though, hopefully. I mean, cherry blossom season, maybe.
I hope that there are cherry blossom trees on the track. That would make me so happy. If we have to watch Max win a race this weekend, I really hope it's pink.
Yeah, I can listen to that national anthem as long as I'm looking at cherry blossoms. That'll make it a little bit better.
That would be so pretty. That, I mean, when they moved, there were so many good reasons to move this race up. And like the hope of less rain is one. Another, you know, like don't have it in monsoon season. Like that's awesome. Putting it in a part of the calendar where it's not like going back and forth across the world. Like that makes a lot of sense. And then immediately my third thought was pink.
Pink. Yay.
Yeah. Do you remember this time last year when we were about to head into like F1 spring break time because China was canceled?
That is crazy. Mm-hmm. That feels like yesterday, but also a million years ago.
Yeah. I'm glad we don't have like a random 3-week break in April this year.
No, did not cope well with that.
Lewis Hamilton gave us the goods this week.
Like the greatest of goods. Like not only did he give us one of the greatest like GQ interviews, but I think the greatest so-and-so goes privately on the internet and answers questions anonymously about themselves, like, deal.
I think it's called Actually Me or something.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I love a Lewis Hamilton magazine cover and interview because he is so much more open and honest. And like, you can tell when he gets to talk to a journalist outside of the F1 space, he's like, here's my heart and soul, and I know you're going to tell a great story, and I'm going to give you... So I feel like at least once a year right now, because that's about, like, it seems like every 9 to 10 months he gives us a new cover, a new interview, something fun. And it's like, we actually get to hear what he's thinking, what's going on.
Yeah, it's like all the things and events and certain topics that you want Lewis to make comments on, and like these are the type of interviews where he can give you that very genuine and candid answers. And with both his Actually Me video and the actual GQ article, it was reinforcing the reasons that I am a fan of Lewis. But I just loved how all of his answers had a purpose. Like, there was some other additional message, or like there was something of just like, he has such an understanding of like the impact that he has where he goes. So whether he's talking about, you know, just answering simple questions like, well, what are challenges that you had? And he's like, funding, my race, like all of these types of, like, he's so consistently about like these issues and everything like that. So he really just takes advantage of every platform that he's given.
I've loved seeing him grow into being able to just call things what they are. Say, I struggled with racism. And so many people even just struggle to admit that or open up about it. And like, the more people talk about these things clearly and honestly, the better and the more change that's going to happen. I think you use the word purpose. Like, he answers with purpose. But it's also genuine. Like, I never felt like through, and I always feel this way about any kind of interview he gives. Like, he is not, I don't think he's a very good actor, is my point. Like, I think this is who he is. And he's someone who's later in his career as an athlete who's clearly done the work on himself to figure out what he cares about and what he wants to talk about and what he wants to use this platform for. And so, yeah, I feel like we've spent a lot of this podcast this year because of everything that's been going on in the F1 space, talking about, like, this is why we're Lewis Hamilton fans. And whenever we get an interview like this, to your point, like, I'm just like, yeah, this is why I'm a Lewis fan. And in that line with that, something that struck me, I wish I pulled the exact quote for this recording. I'm so sorry. If I remember, I'll put it up on the screen in the edit. But he said something in there, like, he didn't expect fans to stick with him when he was no longer dominating or winning the sport. And I'm glad that he understands that that's not the case now. Like, if he went out on top and never had this period in his career, like, I wonder if he never would have learned or realized that. Because I'm a Lewis Hamilton fan, despite the fact that he dominated the sport. It's, like, not always super fun or in my general nature to be like, yeah, I'm just gonna, like, he's the best, I'm gonna pick him. Like, it's always cool when someone you like is the best, and he is. But I'm a Lewis Hamilton fan because he stands up for all the things that he believes in, and I also believe in all those things too. And he is on the right side of issues that matter. And I will constantly say that Lewis Hamilton might be the only driver on the grid right now who actually would want me as a fan. If he met me today, there's like nothing innately about me where he would be like, I don't want you to be my fan. And that's hard to say for most of the drivers on the grid. So it's like, not to get like super sappy about it, but like, I love Lewis Hamilton interviews because it's like, yeah, like it's so easy to root for him.
And then not to suddenly like switch gears and be like, now on
shift
to
away.
Suddenly
yeah.
important things, because all of those things are genuinely very important.
Yes.
But on top of all those things, we get some really fun, interesting tidbits. Like, the Lewis Hamilton's in Fortnite, and I loved that he's like, yeah, so when they asked me to be in Fortnite, my stipulation was only if Roscoe can too. And I just love that, like, that was part of it. I love
Dog
hearing
Dad Lewis.
Dog Dad Lewis is some of my favorite Dog Dad Lewis, like, just like Lewis energy. Yes. Him, the shameless like self promo for Amave when he's like, you know, like, what am I drinking right now? And it's like, well, I, you know, hate self promotion. No, you don't. Don't lie. Brianna whips it out right now. And I'm going to try. I want to now, with the blue one being released, like, what, 2 days from recording right now? On the day of release, not sponsored.
I'm definitely gonna order it.
Oh yeah, especially that blue bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. More insight into his experience with, like, you know, Brad Pitt and filming the new F1 movie and like that whole type of space. Also him hinting at, like, he's been working on music. He loves music. Maybe he'll work on a little bit more and we'll get something. So it was just such a great, like, run of the gamut of, you know, the powerful messages of who he stands up for, what he stands up for, and his insight and his journey. And then also, like, you know, silly, goofy baby girl energy, Lewis Hamilton, like, oh, yeah. A+ interview. No one does it better.
I think it goes without saying the photos were incredible.
But, oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Yes. Loved all of them. The creative concept of the shoots, spot on. I'm loving that he's really into, like, floor-length trench coats right now.
I'm all for any type of vessel of clothing that kind of looks like a cape. Real big cape vibes. Something else I thought was hysterical.
This is true. Nicole I do. And capes have, like, a I very just, special
There's something about
it.
Like, and like a skirt that's like an A-line counts. Cape, skirt.
Yeah.
We're getting so off topic. Lewis being asked, like, what was his favorite outfit from last year was
yes,
going
I was
to be
bring this
one
up.
Of my, I was like, oh my God, what is it going to be? And he was like, I don't know, so many. And then it was like the jacket that Donatella Versace made for him that he didn't even wear to the paddock for post-race. And obviously it was very special. We still don't know what that other unforeseen patch was on that jacket. Like, but I want to know what his favorite album was. He's like, I don't know. There's just, like, so many of them. Like, just right. Lewis things.
Right. That was his one answer to a question that I felt like did a disservice to how intentional you can tell he is about picking his outfits. Like, and I don't think he's hands-off about it either. Like, I love the weekends where it's, like, very clearly, like, they put together a lookbook for the weekend.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that custom... I was surprised that he said the custom jacket. But then once he said it, I was like, yeah, no, that's, like, that's
it.
Sick.
I thought it was going to be the sparkle outfit. And I was like, me too, Lewis! That was also my favorite Lewis Hamilton outfit of 2023.
Oh my gosh.
As we get closer to, like, the move to Ferrari, I feel like we'll see an amp up in press, or, like, you know, either towards the end of the season, or it'll go, like, ghost and then, like, the ramp up next year. So anticipating more Lewis things. And just GQ continues to do my favorite type of interview content, but particularly they just have such a great grasp on the F1 content where every time I see them release something, I know it's going to be good. So, like, I think I sent you this video and it was posted like an hour before because I was like, oh my God, I'm so excited because it's GQ, it's Lewis, it's like guaranteed to be great content.
We just recorded the entire GQ segment. And afterwards, Nicole was like, oh, I forgot to mention that, like, his favorite athlete, and he said Serena without
Williams.
Like drop. Yeah. Also, fun fact that Serena Williams loves karaoke. Like, thank you for giving that behind the scenes tidbit, because Serena Williams is iconic and I love that I now know that about her. And then I was like, yeah, and we also didn't talk about the fact that Lewis Hamilton admitted that he is the GOAT, because he is the GOAT. So thank goodness that he said it. And I was like, we can't put up that segment without talking about this part of the interview.
I love when a humble king isn't humble. It's so fun. Right.
And he's just like, he just kind of shrugged and he's like, yeah, I mean, I guess.
I mean, I am, by definition and by math. Girl yeah. math.
In every possible way, like, I know. And then he, like, immediately was like, had to be humble and cover it up and be like, and I strive to be that every day or something like that.
Everything that I do.
And we're like, yeah. Okay. I'm glad that Lewis knows that he is the GOAT, because I feel like he deserves to wake up every morning knowing that about himself.
Self-aware, humble king.
He's so tired. What'd you do today? Nothing. Barked at some squirrels. Ate my food. Took a nap. Pushed a tennis ball under the couch. Right?
Oh yeah, that's important. No. Bye. Thanks for coming.
Step right up, and see the wonders of the Traveling Motor Circus.
You said this before we started recording, but we need a name for this segment so we don't just use circus every single time. We should have created a specific segment to this topic a long time ago, but it's Let's Play Musical Chairs at Red Bull, where everyone's underperforming who's not named Max Verstappen, and we're tired of watching it.
I... if you told me post summer break that we were still having the conversation of when is Red Bull gonna, you know, replace change Checo seat, and this is where we say we still want Checo on the grid. It's nothing against Checo, but like, Max was not in the race in Australia, and like, so like, what, there should have been no way that Checo was behind them. I don't need whatever damage, blah blah blah, blah. No. I've seen enough. I've heard enough. I can't. I'm so like fed up of talking about will Checo lose his seat or if not, because he should. Like, this is just not even a question anymore.
It all goes back to, like, the reason we're having this conversation, to your point, it's not about Checo as a person or even as a, well, it is about him as a driver. But what makes dominance in F1 not boring is when you have two drivers in the car and I can go into every race weekend tricking my little lizard brain in here into going, I don't know, maybe, like, the second driver might win this weekend. And the back half of Lewis Hamilton's dominance, like, we didn't really have that with VB, but Ferrari had their shit together enough that, like, it was okay. There was exciting things going on. When we had dominance and it was Rosberg-Hamilton, that was always exciting because you had two drivers in the car that were capable. I'm not asking for them to put someone who actually might beat Max in that car if they really don't want to. I just need it to be enough that I can delude myself. We've seen enough of Checo. It's bad and embarrassing for Checo at this point. I don't want to watch it anymore. I've said this in the preseason, that I'm like, put Yuki in that seat, put Ricardo in that seat. Do I think they're both going to get demolished by Max? Uh-huh. But I'm going to get three entertaining races of, maybe? Well, maybe not with the version of Ricardo we're getting right now, who is a shell of a human being, but like, Yuki. Maybe. Honestly, at this point, put Liam Lawson in it as a rookie. At least it will be entertaining.
I mean, that was like already that rumor mill, and I was just like, wow, we read these exact headlines a year ago, except it was just swap out DeVries, put in Ricardo, swap out Lawson, put in Ricardo. Like, it's all the same news stories, yet somehow we're still talking about Checo in the second seat at Red Bull.
Right. And in this episode today, we talk about, like, what makes F1 so special, and, like, Liberty bought F1 and made it into this powerhouse, and, like, why does Drive to Survive work? You know, one of the reasons Drive to Survive works is because that you can play off the whole, like, you're on the same team, but you're actually competitors thing, and that applies to every team on the grid right now, except for the one with the fastest car. The one with the fastest car is giving us nothing interesting, except they are purposefully neutering the second car to make sure Max wins. And, like, that is so freaking boring. Like, this is TV. Guess what? We are watching reality television. That is what sports is. It's reality TV. And you know what you need to make reality TV interesting? Storylines, drama, uncertainty. You know what Red Bull gives us? All of that off track. None of it on track.
It's very certain on track what's going to happen. Off track, just a dumpster fire. But on track, right. Don't worry.
Guess what?
Max is going to be all the way over there, and Checo's going to be somewhere, but right. Not all the way over there.
Guess what? We have a really unsafe place to work, unless you're a white male. But don't worry, because Max Verstappen is definitely going to beat his teammate. And it's going to be the most boring possible way for it to happen. Like, it's just, I completely understand that Red Bull themselves are not incentivized to make this difficult on Max. It's actually probably better the way they're doing it. But it is so freaking boring. And, like, as a product. And I'm so tired. It's been over a year now of me being like, all right, I get it. The Checo Perez thing. We've seen it. I don't want to watch it anymore. But unfortunately, I do think they went into the season with no intention of ever putting Yuki in that seat, but with every intention of, if Daniel Ricciardo could look like a living, breathing race car driver, that they might make the swap. And oh boy, does he
not.
That's
not happening. Definitely not happening. Right. Don't know how we forgot how to drive, I guess. It's just a dumpster fire over there. And especially when you're seeing the difference of Yuki is able to do. And, you know, Danny Ric really struggled in Australia, which is, like, of all tracks and races you doesn't want to be struggling at.
I think I don't think he forgot how to drive a race car. I think there's a reason that normally race car drivers don't drive this late into their career. I think there are clear exceptions to that. And that's the GOATs. It's Schumacher. It's Lewis Hamilton. It's Fernando Alonso. It's like people who are psychotic. Like all these race car drivers are crazy people. Like, and guess what? Daniel Ricciardo was never like a bad driver, but he also isn't Lewis Hamilton or Fernando Alonso. And like, I just, at this point, I don't even think he's good for PR.
But yeah, if anything, it's been pretty much the opposite.
Right. It's like, great, you're slow. We can't put you in the Red Bull like it seemed rumored that they want to. Oh, and guess what? I'm going to alienate all of my female fans by saying they don't deserve to have a safe workplace. Like, it has been such a bad start to the season for Daniel Ricciardo. Yuki isn't really a Red Bull driver. He's a Honda driver, so it doesn't seem like they want to put him in that seat, even though I would argue that he definitely deserves the call-up and for us to at least see it happen.
Right. Part of my brain just really thinks that if Yuki hasn't gotten the call-up at this point, it's just not happening.
Yeah, he's not getting it. No. Right. I think the interesting question is going into 2026 if Yuki goes to Aston Martin, because Aston Martin's becoming the Honda Works team and Yuki's basically the Honda driver. Also, really excited to see Yuki at his home race this week, but as an aside. So I've given up so much hope on Red Bull replacing Perez this season because I don't think either of the AlphaTauri drivers are going to get the call-up. So now I've shifted focus in the musical chairs of Red Bull. How long until Liam Lawson takes one of the two seats?
I know, because now there's the whole conversation. I mean, I hate to even start going into the, like, will Max leave Red Bull? But, like, I think it is...
I'll believe it when I see it.
Right. But you know what? I never know anything anymore. Anything that lasts, like, 6 months of this sport... Look, this man is driving for Ferrari. Like, what is happening?
Ooh, Hamfosi 2025.
Hamfosi!
Yeah. No, I think either Max is going to get a giant Red Bull pay raise in the next year, or he will go drive somewhere else. And we'll know that one of the two answers. He's already the highest paid driver in the sport, but like, nothing like some good leverage to get a pay
And there's race. A good chance that Checo will still just be at Red Bull.
There's no way they could re-sign him. There's no way. Yeah. I
mean,
there's
could you imagine? That it would be the equivalent of Logan staying at Williams.
No, it would be worse because I can ignore Logan finishing P20 every week. I don't have to watch Checo Perez let Max win every week. Yeah, I think Red Bull's problem is that they don't want to put a competitive driver in that seat, but they need to sign a driver that's competitive enough that we get off their case for a year. And by we, I mean the, like, everyone collectively in F1, every person who works in marketing, in sales, in finance, everyone who works for corporate, everyone who is not...
Specifically the two hosts of Gridwalk Podcast.
Yes, every podcast ever. And the reason we all talk about this so much is because we're all bored. And like, it's just... Oh, such a... But going back to... So, do you think there's any chance that Liam Lawson replaces Daniel Ricciardo at some point this season?
My gut just goes with no. Like, I just feel like they're gonna just ride out. Like, everything's just gonna ride out for the year. They're just like, there's enough dumpster fire things going on everywhere. They're just gonna, like, ride out. But, you know, catch this with a clip during silly season and, like, it's...
Does Red Bull
Mick
ever let
Schumacher and Liam Lawson
out?
At Visa Cash App. Like, I don't know. Who even knows what could happen? Surprise! I'm now driving at Visa Cash App Red Bull. Like...
Yeah. Red Bull just doesn't let anything ride out, so I just feel like something's going to happen. What I feel like we're experiencing right now is Red Bull's plan didn't work out. I think they had every hope and intention of believing that Daniel Ricciardo would be able to demolish Yuki. And then since that hasn't happened, they can't put him in the Red Bull. But
now
I think that, but I also don't think they want to do, they don't want to pull Daniel Ricciardo out of the seat. So I think they had everything relying on Yuki not having a good season. And we're three races in and Yuki is having a markedly better season than his teammate. So like, it would be really silly if they swap Yuki out for Liam Lawson.
That would just make, there's no logic there. Which could be why it happens, but...
I feel like Liam's going to end up in a seat on the grid by the end of the season. I'm just trying to figure out the musical chairs of how it happens.
Of, like, who and where and how.
Right. Or, like, how bad does Daniel Ricciardo need to be for them to, like, finally give in and give up on it?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, if they haven't given up on Checo thus far, then, like...
I don't think it's about giving up. It's that I think they like the fact that he's not
going to compete with Max. But you technically then have like three other potential puppet drivers that could also just be driving and letting Max win.
Oh my god!
Like it's all the musical chairs of like which what's the I'm trying to use not the meanest term here. Nope, I'll just say puppet. Whatever puppet you want to put in that car and like. Let them
drive. When
we're
done recording, you need to tell me what word you were going to say. But yeah, I think Checo brings in a lot of financial benefits to that team.
Of course.
Not that Checo's a paid driver, but like the sponsorship that he brings into that team far outweigh any, even Daniel Ricciardo in his highest form value
of
being put into that car.
100%. And fan base too. I mean, like the sheer number of people that no matter who, what, where, will buy Checo merch because it's Checo. Yeah. And like, rightfully so, I get it. But like, Red Bull doesn't want to turn that money away.
Right. It all goes back to Red Bull has zero incentive to put a competitive driver in that car. And they're getting all these other financial benefits of having Checo in the car. I get why Red Bull has Checo in the car. I'm tired of watching it. This is a selfish segment about me as a fan. I want at least some entertainment on track. Or just keep DNFing Max, and then we'll keep like talking about how Checo embarrasses himself by like coming in like P6. Like, actually, I don't remember how he finished last race, but I'm a real good podcast host. I don't remember. It was so long ago now. Yeah, it was 2 weeks. Wait, but I'm really panicking. Why is this information?
Four?
Eight? He wasn't on the podium.
Right. Well, that we know. Australia GP.
I'm having one of those moments where I'm like, why don't I remember anything?
Oh, no, because we were...
No, I watched it live.
Where is this? No, don't show me Saudi Arabia. That just got me so confused. He was P5 because there was Oscar P4.
Yes, you're right. Yeah. Yeah, he finished behind both Ferraris and both. Yeah. Duh.
Right, Liberty Media spent a lot of money.
Liberty Media is the parent company that owns Formula One. They also own the Atlanta Braves, who I hate with all of my heart, and a bunch of other sporting franchises. Essentially, this is... they also own things like SiriusXM. They buy things, and they have a giant parent company that owns a lot of things. One of those things is F1, and now they own MotoGP for, what, $4 billion? Something absurd?
Yeah, something. And now I want to, like, look up what the actual, like, price is. I know we're in the middle of this, and I should have done this, like, right before, but now I just am.
I should have.
Liberty Media MotoGP live checking. Ooh, makes the value at 4.5.
Oh, yeah, but they only bought something like 83%, I believe.
Enterprise value of $4.5 billion. Beep, beep, beep.
They own the largest share.
Transaction also amounts to an equity value of 3.5 billion euros or 3.8 billion for the company with the existing debt balance, blah, 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 blah.
Expects to pay for the
business with approximately 65% in cash and 21% shares of Liberty Formula One stock. All of this is still lots and lots of money. I mean, it makes sense. I didn't necessarily find this acquisition a big surprise. Like, not that I was like, oh, I knew this was going to happen, but it tracks. It makes more sense for Liberty Media acquiring MotoGP than it did acquiring the Atlanta Braves.
I don't know. I think Atlanta Braves were like their first foray into like sports ownership. I think MotoGP, since the second motorsport series they purchased, makes a lot more sense than when they bought F1 too. Like, I think that was more shocking. Like, an American company buys F1 was a huge deal when it happened. I saw a lot of emotion and panic about this. And I do want to remind everyone that whether or not you agree with every single decision or everything that Liberty Media has done with F1, there is no denying that it has turned it into a profitable business that now has so much more viewership and is so much more popular than it ever was before.
Now there's people who, but there's also the group of people that hate that that happened, which is silly. Like, sorry that your sport has more fans and that makes you upset, whatever.
Yeah.
But
I think it's important to remind everyone that if you like your sport, it is important that that sport makes money so it continues, right? Because, and everything I've read up about MotoGP, which is not a sport that I watch, so I can't speak from that, them as fans, like, but marketing and business perspective, this is a dying series. And that means that a cash injection like this, Liberty coming in with their the expertise of what they have done with F1, it means that the series doesn't die out. Like, that sounds like big picture.
Would you rather have or have not?
Like, it's... Yeah. I do. I completely get the big picture macro argument for our world that it's not great when, like, a lot of, when very few companies own a lot of things. But I don't know if this is the hill to die on for that.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think this is the exact perfect example or, like, the most shining, glamorous moment for that argument.
Right. I think MotoGP fans probably, I think the same demographic of MotoGP fans that hate that women and people of color and just people who are not white British dudes like F1 are the same people who are really mad that F1 might bring those same types of people over to MotoGP. But those are the same people that are mad about everything in the world. So I'm a little like...
You're just bad.
Yeah. I'm actually, like, on the flip side, I am super intrigued to see what F1 does first. I'm so used to saying that. What Liberty does first with MotoGP. Because this is their second motorsport series. I'm sure they've learned lessons from going through with F1 and doing things. So it's almost going to be like, we could watch MotoGP, and it's like a weird case study of what Liberty would do if they started with F1 today.
What do they think worked?
Yes.
What do they think worked and will work now? And, like, what things will they try differently? That's a really interesting thing that I didn't think about. You're so right. This is, like, a little bit of a case study. And yes, obviously there's certain differences, but there's clearly a lot of overlap. So there definitely will be some strategic decisions that mirror or could be very opposite from what they did with F1.
And I think it's interesting coming off the rumors that we've been getting that F1 is putting way too much stock, in my personal opinion, into Drive to Survive. And if you see the Drive to Survive like docuseries that have come since, they have not come near the success or benefit or whatever the right term is here. They have not benefited their sports series the way that Drive to Survive helped F1. Like, we haven't seen a super spike in tennis interests or golf, or even like the quarterback series hasn't brought in a ton of new NFL viewership, but that's mostly because there's not just like a ton to bring in anymore.
Yeah, there's not that growth. There's not that like
room for growth and increase. Yeah. So I think if, as F1 fans, we can watch what Liberty does with MotoGP to get a glimpse into what Liberty thinks is important for the marketing of F1. And if the first thing they do is set up a docuseries and they don't invest in social media and influencers and cultivating a diverse group of fans, then we'll know that Liberty learned the wrong things from what made F1 so successful.
Exactly. So if we suddenly be getting a Netflix announcement of Drive to Survive, MotoGP, like, okay, you're just thinking it's going to copy-paste, work the same, which we know that's not...
And I'm not saying don't do a docuseries, but the rumors are that F1 was disappointed with the performance of Drive to Survive this last year, and their solution, allegedly, this is all just rumors, not substantiated by anything, is to cut back on what the teams are allowed to show on social media, because that's the issue with Drive to Survive in their mind, allegedly, according to these rumors. And I'm just saying right now that that's not the issue with Drive to Survive. Just things have a shelf life. But apparently that's why we're not getting like McLaren's Unboxed anymore.
That's silly, stupid. That doesn't make any sense to me. I'm hoping that that changes and everyone's just kind of focused on doing other things right now. But I love that behind the scenes content.
It's so, like, that was the biggest thing that happened post-Bernie for F1, is that they opened up the ability to create social content. The teams could create content, the drivers could create content. And I've noticed this year that none of the teams are doing their behind-the-scenes weekend YouTube videos. The drivers are sharing less from track. Like, I have seen even less, like, weekend recap photo dumps.
There's been a lot of drivers. Pre-film stuff, and even a lot of the, like, whoever does the post-race photo dumps, a lot of things are, like, off track or not right. Paddock associated, blah, blah, blah.
Which is cool and in its own right, but I can feel personally the removal of the ability to film in the paddock.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, we've gone through this. We've went through this already.
We've done this before.
Right. That doesn't make more people want to watch your race weekends. I'm sorry if Max wins all the time. That's not the solution. But circling back to MotoGP, I'm intrigued how they're going to start and what's going to happen. And, you know, if there is going to be a spike in interest with whatever they do.
Yeah, we'll see. And then if they continue to then acquire more motorsports.
Yesterday was a really rough day, by the way, in Philly sports, considering both the Flyers and the Phillies lost in overtime.
You still got the point in overtime, specifically talking about the Flyers against my Islanders, which I'm mad at them for not winning in regulation.
Yeah,
Nine seconds.
Could you imagine the highs and lows of being Morgan Frost, where he tips in the goal to send it to overtime with 9 seconds left, and then him and TK turn the puck over? And
makes no sense. Oh. That's, again, our voice notes all day yesterday were just us sending.
Hello. I'm going to lose. No, I'm going to lose. Context.
Brianna, Flyers fan, me and Islanders fan, played yesterday together, both being like, playoffs? Question mark, huh? We'll try. Important for both of us, except so all day we were just like, no, you're going to win. No, these are the reasons you're going to win. This is why you shouldn't be upset, because my team sucks.
We literally, most people would be texting back and forth saying, like, yeah, my team's better than your team because of this. And, like, our teams are huge rivals of each other. And instead, we spent the entire day going, nah, you shouldn't be worried, you're going to win. And, hey, I was right, because you shouldn't be worried, because your team did win.
When the score, it was 3-2. I'm like, there's a minute left. I'm like, nope, it's too much time. Too much time, we're going to go into overtime. That point's going to fly away. It's fine. It's great. Anyway, this is a Formula One podcast.
It is time for Gridwalk to attempt to predict an F1 race result with zero on-track data. This will definitely go well. Gridwalk's race weekend predictions.
But, like, my gut feels just bad about, like, half the grid.
Well, that's because I feel like our predictions are always going to feel so influenced by the last race we watched. And the last race we watched was weird. So it's not like we can say, yeah, Carlos won the race. Though that Max DNF'd. So yeah. My goal for the predictions this week is that we don't have the same predictions.
I know. So, that's really what I'm hoping for. Yeah. But
So put in the comments below. We make 5 predictions. How many are going to be the same before we, like, do some weird rock, paper, scissors and, like, switch them? So how are we good at the content this week or not is the question.
I'm trying to, oh God, literally, I have written down multiple drivers for my last pick and I keep crossing them out for all of the reasons that I just don't think it's going to happen.
Well, maybe it will come to you when we do the rest of our predictions.
Okay. Oh, God, I don't feel good about that either. All right, this is going to be on the fly last.
Okay.
Whatever happens in my gut. Happens.
Yep.
It happens.
Well, a quick update. Neither of us got a single prediction right last week, which means that I'm still up by 2 points, 7-5 on the season. And that is what it is. But it did show at least a test that our changing what we're picking worked. A little bit. It wasn't so certain that we got things right automatically.
Everything becomes a dumpster fire when Max DNF. So as soon as that happened, we were like, well, everything's now ruined.
But looking ahead to the Japan GP, we're starting out with P3. Who do you think is going to be the last on the podium, Nicole?
I have Carlos Sainz in P3.
I forgot to pull up Sounders.
Oh my god, so did I.
I can just hit it if you want.
Okay.
Okay, say that one more time.
I have Carlos Sainz in P3.
All right. Well, I'm very excited that you have Carlos Sainz, and I want to hear about why you picked him. But I'm excited because I put Charles Leclerc.
I was hoping you also kind of went this flip-flop. I don't know. I think I'm also just absorbing as much of the time that I feel like I can properly root for Charles that I have left. And we've been trying to go back and forth on like properly seeing the racing between Carlos and Charles. And I think as the season continues, it will be something that we're paying close attention to. And I don't know. Carlos is riding a high and it's something you lose your appendix and you suddenly like gain so much in pace. So I don't know. Charles has just so much like build up right now and like this momentum that Carlos has so much of this momentum and build up that I just feel like it can only go for so long. And with kind of the performance and where we've seen Ferrari, it still just doesn't seem like impossible. And they seem still like the next best option to be predicting. So I'm just putting my faith in Charles this weekend.
Yeah. So basically you have Charles as P2. So that's why you're picking Carlos at P3.
Yes.
Okay. I didn't think that far into it. Obviously, I have Max mentally at P1. And I do think, I felt like it could be a coin flip between one of the Ferraris ending up P3. Whether that's because Checo gets it together and ends up P2, or because the other Ferrari's in P2. Like, Ferrari seems to be in this weird no man's land where I don't trust that they're competitive enough with Max. But I do think that they're a good head and shoulders above all the teams behind them.
Well, because then that goes into my question, which we don't have necessarily get to yet, but it wasn't you having Charles at P3 because you think like McLaren's going to get things like incredibly right this weekend.
I don't think you fire your technical director or mutually part ways with your technical director after 3 months and it's going well. That doesn't mean I think they're going to have a bad weekend. It just doesn't mean I'm going to bet on them to like pull it all together right now. Like that just doesn't.
No, that seems fair.
Yeah. And who knows why? Like, you don't normally have a 3-month relationship in F1 and then part ways because things. Like, because of what's going on right now on track, because they're planning so far ahead, is what I'm trying to say. But no, I don't know who's going to be P2, but it felt like one of the Ferraris will be P3. And that's kind of just. I went with Carlos. I do think what I'm hoping for is that both Ferrari drivers have a normal weekend, because even though, like, yeah, like, we haven't quite gotten them both on a normal weekend where both of their cars are working and one is actually driving. And last weekend, I think, was the most, like, quote-unquote normal circumstances. By that, I mean last race weekend. But I do think there's an element of adrenaline and a comeback story that, like, Carlos just had everything going right behind him. And then, so I don't know. I'm hoping for a normal weekend so we can get the measure of the two drivers in this car.
Really see. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who do you have for P5?
All right. I get nervous saying it out loud because I just don't want to have the same one as you, but I went with Oscar Piastri.
Oh my gosh. Wow, what an interesting time. I have Lando Norris.
Okay, so the question is, do you have Lando Norris because you have Piastri finishing P4? Do you have Checo in P4? Or, like, let me rephrase this question so you don't have to get into the minutiae of that. Like, which McLaren driver do you think is going to perform better this weekend?
I do mentally have Lando performing better than Oscar. I think when I was doing my math, it was like, okay, Checo P4 if I have both of the Ferraris on the podium and this is how the math is going. It would be cool if that slot was Oscar, but I just don't necessarily think that's like likely going to happen. I mean, he did have a great race in Australia, but Lando was a little bit ahead of him there. And I think just going into this weekend, it would be, if I have to pick a McLaren, I am going with Lando for P5.
So I think it's so interesting because I agree. I think Lando is going to perform better than Oscar this weekend. And that's why I have Oscar at P5. And because I think Checo has two extremes right now. I think he's either slower than this top group or he's P2.
Mm.
So I felt like there was like no world where Lando,
him in the P4 world. It's either like he's right on the podium in that spot, or like we're not necessarily,
or
in
he's
this
behind
discussion.
The McLarens. Yeah. Yeah. Or, and I'm predicting that the hierarchy this weekend will be still Ferrari, McLaren, and then like whatever
mishmash,
whatever Mercedes and Aston do this weekend, just like together. So, like, I think Checo can finish above the mishmash. So if maybe the mishmash is, you know, maybe Mercedes really figures it out this weekend and McLaren drops back, which is not what I'm predicting, but like theoretically. But I think Checo is either having a really bad weekend or he's looks sad compared to Max Verstappen, but at least he beat for the Ferraris. Like that's kind of where I like no in betweens for Checo for me.
Yeah, yeah, definitely for sure.
All right, who's your P7?
My P7, I'm holding steady with Fernando Alonso.
Nicole, we are against the odds. 3 for 3 different. Because I went with Lewis Hamilton.
Okay!
Yeah. So I think this is interesting. So essentially, you think that Aston's going to have a better weekend than Mercedes, is what you're saying here. Yep. And I have the opposite.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's still so up in the air. Australia was such a nightmare for Mercedes, and gosh, Aston still seems like they were figuring things out. So this was another one that seemed like that coin flip mishmash. Predicting is so impossible here. This was either going to be a Mercedes or an Aston, and it still just like pains me to like be predicting Mercedes like written down lower than a P5, even though I know in my F1 grid math that's where I have them, but it's something about the visual of like writing it down and saying it that pains me. So
okay, so the only reason I went with Mercedes over Aston Martin and put Lewis Hamilton in P7, which shouldn't feel good to write Lewis Hamilton to your point in P7, I had him optimistically P5 last week, whereas twofold, I do think that the Mercedes was faster than the Aston last week, not in qualifying, but in the race. They just double DNF'd, which,
happens.
I'm not going to get into that. We talked about that enough on last week's episode. They're also bringing upgrades, and not that Mercedes has given me a lot of hope or faith as of late in their ability to upgrade or do anything with this car. I just, normally speaking, I think upgrades more often than not are better than no upgrades. And it doesn't seem like Aston Martin is rumored to, at this point in the week, be bringing anything. So that's kind of, I'm going to be a blind, weird optimist that like, yeah, Mercedes might not, Lewis might make it into Q3. Woo!
Yeah, I can't deal with another quality. Now I'm triggered past. Okay.
Yep.
P10, who do you have?
I'm banking on Alex Albon getting the first Williams points of the season. Alex Albon, P10.
Wow. We still don't have any of the same picks. This is such a beautiful day for us, and a really long time since this happened. I have Yuki in P10.
Yeah, when we get here, it's kind of like, oh, I didn't mean to hit the sounder again, but I felt like it was fitting. Yeah, it's a little like, I think there's a group of 3 or 4 or 5 drivers that all make sense in this kind of grouping. So yeah Yuki makes sense. I could see Yuki doing it.
Yeah, top midfield, I think, like that mid real field is kind of where I put him right now. Although I would love to see Alex be in the points again, so.
And I always just assume there's going to be at least one DNF from a top team or something like that. But yeah, between ignoring Stake, because I just don't think they will get it together. These give them like 5 or 6 races. But I feel like between And ignoring Alpine.
I was going to say, reason. The next thing, you yeah. have to also ignore Alpine.
Honestly, like, I just had a panic moment where I forgot that Alpine existed. So I was like, I know I'm missing a team. Like, in my head, I was, like, counting the teams I was about to say out loud, and I was like, I'm missing a team. Yeah, so ignoring Steak and Alpine, I feel like there's three teams that could, like, fall in this, like, we're on the fringe of points. Like, if someone messes up above us, we'll get points. And that's the Red Bull Junior team, Williams, and Haas, surprisingly. So, like, I know Williams doesn't have any points yet. It's just that, like, they're, like, right there with Alex. Like, they're going to get points.
Needs to be there.
Well, but similarly, who's your P11?
Alex Albon. So I would have loved for him. I would love for him to be in points. However, predicting close but no cigar once again.
That would be so painful as an Alex Albon fan. It'd be so sad for him. I have Nico Hülkenberg. I have Haas out of the points this week.
Yeah, I mean, that's tends to be the normal fair prediction, but Nico's popping up places somewhere sometimes, or if there's some double point finishes, which you told me a year ago, I would be shocked.
It's the final lap hitting every F1 garage. Get ready for this week's yellow sector notes.
Starting with Red Bull, there's still no update on the sexual assault investigation into Christian Horner. We continue to hope that the Red Bull Corporation is actually taking this seriously, even though I feel that less and less every week, and that the victim is safe and surrounded by as much support as possible. This will continue to be the weekly yellow sector note for Red Bull until we have an answer, because, quite frankly, I don't feel like talking about anything Red Bull's doing besides this, because until you deal with this, I'm not going to promote anything for you. All right. So moving on to some actual yellow sector notes this week, starting with Ferrari. Charles Leclerc is rumored to be opening an ice cream shop, and I don't know if the internet tricked me on that, because it was April Fool's this week, but...
Nope, this is definitely real. This was coming on the internet before April Fool's, and it's called Lec.
It's an incredible name. There's no way that's the name. There's L-E-C. Just no way.
Lec.
How did we... Like, I think people found, like, an Instagram account for this?
There was an Instagram account. Charles had posted, like, it was, like, in a photo dump. He was eating some ice cream or something. Like, it's,
All right. We'll keep you updated on an opening date, because I genuinely put this on the yellow sector notes today, thinking that it was an April Fool's joke. I just thought was funny. But fun. All right. In more serious news, McLaren has parted ways with their new technical director after 3 months, which can't be a good thing for what they feel about the development of the car or what that technical director felt about the McLaren's facilities and working process. So, something! They did not like each other. 3 months is very fast in F1. In the Aston Martin world, rumors are intensifying of Fernando going to Mercedes. There's some tricklings of him maybe going to Red Bull. I don't know, but Fernando is determined to make the rest of silly season interesting for 2025, and we always thank Fernando for making things messy and interesting. It was reported that Adidas is going to be replacing Tommy Hilfiger and Puma as the merchandise supplier for Mercedes in 2025. Yuki is hosting a karting event in Japan this weekend to support the Japanese Red Cross and specifically fundraising for earthquake victims. Haas note this week isn't actually about Haas, but it's about Gunther Steiner, and he was Haas for years, so it counts. But Gunther Steiner was selected as an ambassador for the Miami GP, and that both works and doesn't work and really works. And honestly, just great work by the Miami GP marketing team to get him. Williams did a pop-up this week in Tokyo that included a typical driver meet and greet. The photos look really fun. This is old news, but we haven't had a chance to talk about the fact that Zhou Guan Yu did a VB helmet for the Australian GP that included a mullet and a mustache, and it was incredible. Absolutely incredible. I wish the car wasn't so slow, because I will not stop talking about how VB and Zhou Guan Yu is, like, one of the most entertaining driving pairings. They both have so much personality, and they drive the slowest car on the grid. Except for what's probably actually the slowest car on the grid, which is Alpine. And this week, the Alpine's admin is really just over everyone's shit. So a reminder, please be nice to the admins of these social media accounts. They can't fix the car. And you commenting that on social media isn't going to change that fact. But I'm glad that the Alpine admin is leaning into the funny about the fact that they are the slowest team on the grid right now. And that's the grid walk for April 4th, 2024 completed. How was my sector time today, Nicole?
Faster than we're back to racing in Japan already.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Gridwalk. Thank you to our co-creators, Nicole Katz and Brianna Klein. Thank you to our four-legged executive producers and me, VoiceOver Man. Don't forget to subscribe, like the video, turn on auto downloads, and leave a review to provide us with a fresh set of tires for the next week's show. You can follow us on social media at Gridwalk Show for daily content. We will be back to walk the Formula One grid every Thursday, and we will see you for the post-Gridwalk debrief in the comments.
Today felt like musical chairs and not a gridwalk.